Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Thursday, June 16th, and this is, of course, the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. I got Matt Norlander with me, got Sam Vecenie with me, and we're now just 1 week away from the 2016 NBA draft. And among the biggest stories, if not the biggest story, is that Ben Simmons has refused to date to work out for or speak with the Philadelphia 76ers. Sam, I want to start with you. And I guess we've known since the lottery was finalized with the Sixers picking first and the Lakers picking second that this was a likely scenario, that Ben Simmons would prefer to be in L.A. for a variety of reasons. It's the Lakers instead of the Sixers. It's L.A. instead of Philly. And I don't mean that as a shot at Philly, but if you're going to be young and wealthy, like L.A. is a hell of a great place to live. That's why more young and wealthy people live in L.A. than Philadelphia. He can get bigger endorsement deals as a Laker than a Sixer. There's a whole bunch of reasons for Ben Simmons to prefer to be an L.A. Laker than a Philadelphia 76er. So I think we've always known this was a possibility, that he might try to force his hand and get to L.A. But we now know because in the past couple of days, Brian Colangelo has acknowledged that to date they haven't been able to do anything with Ben Simmons. Here's my question for you. If you were the Sixers and you had convinced yourself Ben Simmons is the best prospect in this NBA draft, would the fact that he won't deal with you prior to the draft make you move off him and go to Brandon Ingram?
Well, as someone who lives in Los Angeles and is young and has no illusions of wealth at this point, I can definitely confirm to you that living in Los Angeles is a very good time. Having said
now,
that,
now imagine if you were wealthy, how great it would be.
Oh my God, just be incredible. Live in the Hollywood Hills and just, you know, have the greatest view and hang out. It'd be great. Having said that, I think Ben's going to end up in Philadelphia. It really wouldn't change my opinion on any of this at all, to be clear. It's just that, yeah, there are some concerns, I guess, about Ben in the circumstance that maybe he isn't necessarily the best effort guy, or maybe he doesn't have a desire to be great. And I think that actually some of that is legitimate. I think there are concerns about all of it. Having said that, though, this Philadelphia team has more familiarity with Ben than I think a majority of any other NBA franchises would, because of the familiarity that Brett Brown has with the family, with his father, and he knows Ben already. So I'm not super concerned at this stage, if I'm Philadelphia, that he's not coming in for a workout, or that he maybe does he still hasn't worked out with Los Angeles either, but it wouldn't surprise me if at some point next week Ben Simmons has a secret Los Angeles workout scheduled and they try and force the way there, whatever. It doesn't really matter to me. I think that he's going to end up in Philadelphia. He's going to be happy to go number one. There's not really going to be a holdout situation, and just everything's going to be fine. Brandon Ingram will end up at two and it'll be fine.
Matt, any criticism of Ben Simmons for handling the draft process this way, is it warranted or even reasonable? I say that because I read a column yesterday where they said Ben Simmons' approach to this draft is flawed, it's nonsensical, so on and so forth, that it's a mistake.
Can I just point out that I think that's ridiculous to start?
Oh, it is ridiculous. No, it is ridiculous. And here's why I would say, just to add on, it's ridiculous because if you're going to call it a mistake, then you got to tell me it's a mistake because this could happen. It's a mistake because it could lead to this. Best I can tell, and Sam, please, Matt, you as well, correct me if I'm wrong. Best I can tell, the draft, even if Ben Simmons never leaves his house between now and next Thursday night, is going to go one of two ways for Ben Simmons. One way it will go is that the Sixers actually, like, say, you know what, if he's not going to deal with us and he doesn't want to be here, then we'll just take Brandon Ingram, which means Ben Simmons would actually get what he wants. That's one scenario. He would get what he wants.
By the way, do we know that that's what Ben wants?
Well, if it wasn't, then somebody would have already said that, right? I mean, it's been out there since the lottery. Like,
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, it's kind of been out there from, you know, shoe executives and everything.
Plus it's common sense.
I feel like we haven't heard it from Ben or anything. Well, Ben's been silent this entire circumstance,
yeah,
which he should be. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think that he should be, but, like, I'm not sitting here going, yeah, it's for sure that Ben Simmons wants to go to Los Angeles.
Like, I guess I would say
I get the appeal of it, yeah, but I'm just, like, not certain of it either.
I guess I would say two things to that. One, it would be Philadelphia suicide to for Ben Simmons to say, I would rather be in L.A. and then actually have to become a Sixer. You just don't want to get involved in that. So he should shut up. If it weren't the case, if Ben Simmons wanted to be the number one pick in the draft, then that is something he would have said by now. And beyond that, it's just common sense. Like, you'd rather be, like, for all the reasons stated before, you'd rather be a Los Angeles Laker as a rookie than a Philadelphia 76er as a rookie. Like, the Lakers are going to be on TV 20-something times next year, no matter who's on the roster, just because it's the Lakers. You know, you don't get that with other franchises. So I think, A, his silence says something, and B, it's just common sense. Like to be clear, I would rather, if I'm Ben Simmons, be a Laker than a Sixer. So to get back to the point I was trying to make, there's only two ways this could unfold. He could actually force Philadelphia, or at least make Philadelphia pass on him, which leads to him getting what he wants, being an L.A. Laker. Or, let me be clear, getting to what I believe he wants, being an L.A. Laker. And the only alternative to that is he's the number one pick in the 2016 NBA draft. Like, literally the worst thing that could happen to him by handling the draft process this way is that he's the number one overall pick in the NBA draft. So, Norlander, like, am I missing something? Or, like, what's the big deal? This is, if I were advising Ben Simmons, I would advise him to handle it the same way.
I think that's generally pretty on the nose. Could develop something of a reputation of being a little high maintenance early on. Don't know if that'll really matter much down the road, depending on...
He already has that reputation already, though, so it doesn't really affect it now.
What I'm getting at is, I don't know if that will wind up even mattering whatsoever if he becomes a really, really good player. Now, if he doesn't, then obviously this kind of stuff could have impact on future earnings and contracts and dealings down the road. We'll see. I think it's reasonable. You usually see this every few years, both at the NFL and the NBA level, because occasionally we do have situations, most notably in NFL history, the two players that flat out told teams they would not be going to play for them were John Elway with the Baltimore Colts, and Eli Manning refused to play for the San Diego Chargers when he ended up going to the Giants. So I get it overall. I'm not a huge fan of it. I don't know if there's too much of a downside. I wonder what the better fit will be for him overall. I think there is something to him wanting to play with L.A., obviously because of the franchise, because of the track record, both with L.A. and both with Philly. And by the way, you know, I don't know how tied he is to his home country, but, Los Angeles to Australia is a lot easier than Philly to Los Angeles to Australia as well. So there could be certainly something to that as well. Overall, I think he's going to, no matter what situation you put him in, I would think that Simmons personally will, I don't know if his career is going to be affected that much by whatever organization he goes to. But I think with Ingram at number two, personally, I think Ingram would be better suited in LA to start off with than Philadelphia. It's pretty interesting. I would say that these two players and what Simmons is doing and has done is really some of the most interesting parts of this draft, because in a lot of ways it's kind of blah. I guess what Boston will wind up doing is fairly interesting, because they could move it if they want. There are plenty of options there. But overall, this does seem like a draft void of a ton of storylines. Now, maybe that changes once the finals finish here. I'm recording this on Thursday, so who knows if we're even going to a game seven, or if the finals finish and we wake up on Friday and we've got 6 days until the draft and we have big coverage there. But overall, guys, I don't blame Simmons' camp for the way that he's doing this, but it's just not, I don't think it's the route that necessarily I would take.
Meantime, it has been reported by, I believe, Basketball Insiders that Denzel Valentine has a, quote, fairly significant knee issue that could cause him problems on a draft night. Sam, how do you make sense of this if you're an NBA team? If they tell you, here's a guy who's a lottery talent, but long-term, he's going to have a knee issue. Long-term, it's going to cause problems. We don't know when, but we believe at some point it will. How do you balance those things?
Shout out to Basketball Insiders for breaking that story. That's a good one.
That's a good one. It's a good scoop.
I would say that the way that that's going to kind of affect Denzel is really interesting in this draft particularly, because I think that it's such a weak draft that you can kind of sell yourself on Denzel Valentine maybe getting a year out of him, and, you know, not a year, a full contract out of him, 4 years, and then maybe cutting bait or maybe kind of evaluating then. If you think this is a longer term problem, it's going to affect him when he's 26 or 27, not when he's 22. If you're going to get that kind of value out of him at, you know, number 15 overall, number 18 overall, number 13 overall in this draft, and you think he's going to be really good, like you think he's going to be able to become a role player for you almost overnight and really shoot the ball well, really move the ball well, I think you can sell yourself on taking him right around where his draft stock was before this reported news. And if you think that it's going to come into play a little bit earlier, if you think that your doctors can't really get him on the right kind of treatment plan to, you know, extend this out further into the future, then you kind of have to wonder about whether or not, okay, do we have to move him down to, you know, the 25 to 40 range? Do we move him down to, you know, that end of the first round, early second round range? It's a really, really tough, really tough predicament for teams, but it's going to go on a team by team basis where you trust your doctors and see if they feel that this is a manageable condition versus a condition that will cause problems for him sooner rather than later.
Let me ask you a question, Norlander, about the way Denzel came back to school for his senior year, had an amazing senior season, and then was at one point projected as a lottery pick. Who knows if he'll go there now because of this issue, but he obviously helped himself with a final year of college. Same thing for Buddy Hill. A little random. I hope I'm not catching you off guard, but who are the guys in college that you think could do something similar next year, who could go from being a borderline first-round draft pick like Buddy and Denzel were, to being people who are projected lottery picks as long as health isn't an issue?
Okay. Let me think. So, make that sizable jump like Denzel, like Buddy did, coming back. I think Melo Trimble could. I think that is reasonable if he really had a very, very good year. He immediately pops to mind. Who else would be a good candidate? You see, like, Ivan Rapp doesn't qualify because he's already in that kind of lottery range right now, top 20 range. I'm trying to find someone that would be like late first or second round pick.
Sam, does Grayson Allen count?
Yeah, I would say
Grayson Allen.
I'd say probably doesn't count because he was already projected like top 20.
Yeah, that's fair. A guy that I like is Jerron Blossom Game. 6'7" guy, can really shoot it. Can create his own shot a little bit. He's a really good defender, long, 6'7", 6'10" wingspan, was at the combine this year and performed really well. Wouldn't surprise me if we saw him make a bit of a leap next year. I'm trying to think of some other guys, though. It gets really tricky.
For the sake of GP's question, both make the leap in terms of draft stock, but have that draft stock largely take such a high jump because they are, you know, at worst, second team All American status, and probably first team if you want to go.
Sure.
Buddy Denzel comparison.
Maybe Josh Hart is a decent example.
Josh Hart's actually a pretty decent call because he'll have a really good shot at being a top 10 player of influence in college basketball.
Another guy, Trevon Blewett, I think could be interesting.
Can't see Blewett being both top 10 in hoops and then like a top 10 pick.
I don't think he'd be like top 10, no. Maybe like top 20 pick like Denzel was. Another guy would be Dylan Brooks if he can shoot. If you can get Dylan Brooks to get up to like that 39% three-point range, he's a really good athlete. He can attack in the middle. He can defend reasonably well. He's kind of slow feet a little bit in that same mold as Denzel, but if you can get him to shoot, I really like Dylan Brooks' potential.
Not a bad call. GP, any guys that spring to mind for you?
Yeah, I was bringing that up, I was having problems like coming up with names.
Does Tyler Lydon count? I don't think that he would be. Lydon's kind of a guy that's already on the radar in a lot of ways, though.
Could Alonzo Trier?
Maybe. He's still kind of a guy. He's like a five-star that was kind of on the radar a lot. Would like Malcolm Hill maybe from Illinois? If he drops like 25 points a game this year, which, I mean, it's Illinois. Could happen. He's a good passer, good shooter most of the time. Can kind of do a lot of different stuff. He's not a super athlete, but he can kind of do a decent amount of stuff there. Trying to think, man, it does get a little bit tricky. I'm trying to think of like,
how about this one?
Older players.
Could Nigel Hayes do it?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the key would be the jump shot. I thought about Hayes, but Hayes was kind of on the, he was on like the lottery bubble this year, you know, coming into the year at least. Then he had a really bad year as a junior in terms of efficiency. If he's an efficient shooter, I think that he's probably, you know, top 16, 18 pick next year.
What about OG Anunoby?
Anunoby's, yeah, I mean, he's really good already. Like, he's already on that radar. You know, like, most people have him as a first-round pick for next year already just because of the tremendous talent level that he has as a player. I mean, he's just a freak athlete. He's 6'8", 6'9", and crazy wingspan, defends like crazy. If he makes that, like, Oladipo leap offensively, maybe he's, like, a top 10 pick, top 6 pick next year. But that's asking a lot. Oh, man, it gets tricky. I mean, if you think that Isaac Copeland from Georgetown, that's a guy I've kind of always been into. Malik Pope, maybe, finally figures it out at San Diego State. Right. That's a guy, again, though, that's always been on the radar. It's kind of hard to find that older player. Maybe a guy that I've always kind of liked, maybe not as an NBA player, but maybe could make that leap if he can get the jump shot down, is Nigel Williams-Goss at Gonzaga. The transfer point guard coming in. Point guard next year, outside of the freshmen that are coming in, the more experienced point guards that are going to be in the draft, isn't the best class. Like, you have Monte Morris, who's going to be, you know, maybe a borderline first round pick next year. But Nigel Williams-Goss is going to have a chance to really move up, I think. He's a former McDonald's All-American that, you know, was, I think he was first team All Pac-12 in his second year at Washington before transferring. So maybe he has a really big year and kind of makes that leap more into the ether. But like you guys said, it's hard to predict these guys, obviously, for a reason.
You know who had a really big year at the point guard position not too long ago? Devin Downey. Shout out to Devin Downey.
Saw that one coming.
I actually didn't. I started racking my brain. I was like, who's he talking about here?
Devin Downey's who I'm talking about. Undeniably, that was a big year. He beat Kentucky for crying. He beat John Wall.
Yeah, that's a great year. Great. Now, who had a better week? So you think Devin Downey had a better weekend than, say, Derek Willis, speaking of Kentucky?
Man. Listen, I read the story last week, or whenever it was, early this week, and it said Derek Willis was found lying in the street. And I was like, okay. You know, I've in fairness, I've laid down in the street before. Man, not outside a car, in the middle of a road? Like, how did he not die?
You've never been.
It's a big body. I mean, it's a big target to miss. Like, you'd think that you'd be able to see it.
He was in the road asleep next to his car. The video, Matt Norlander posted it earlier today at CBSSports.com. Go check it out. It's on his Twitter feed. It's on my Twitter feed. It's amazing. The cops pull up, and Derek Willis.
You might think he's dead when you pull up. Like,
oh, I would. Oh, no, I would assume he's dead. I would assume it's a gunshot wound to the head. You know, that's what I would assume, right? He's lying in the court. We're talking about Derek Willis, who plays at Kentucky. He's lying on a road next to his car, passenger door open. He's just like asleep on the road. Like, it really is amazing on some level. He's like alive. Like, that's how you die. You go to sleep on a road in the middle of the night and somebody runs over you. That's how you die. Like, I've had too much to drink before. Once or twice.
Have you ever been that drunk, Parrish? Honest, be honest. Have you ever been that drunk?
Oh, sure. But like, never drunk enough to where I'd lie down. I wouldn't get behind the wheel of a car if I was that drunk. I have done this, and all of this is like back when I was young and irresponsible. But now I'm so mature.
Like 2014?
Yeah, it was like when I was 36. No, when I was young, like I can remember being that drunk, like leaving downtown or leaving a casino, but I'd never drive my car. Like, I would either get a ride home or I've slept in my car before. I was like, dude, I cannot drive. Like, there's no scenario in which I could drive. And so I've slept inside of my car. Like, I can remember one night, long night out, downtown Memphis, and just had too much to drink, and it was time to go home. And I went to the parking garage, and I was like, I cannot drive. This is crazy. And I just, like, got into my car in the parking garage and just, like, went to sleep. And I woke up at some point with, like, a security guard knocking on the window, like, yo, man, you cannot sleep in the parking garage. And then I figured it out from there. But, like, it never occurred to me to, pull over on the side of the road? Like, that's what he did. He pulled over on the side of the road, got out of his car, and laid down and went to sleep. Like, that's crazy.
He did not get charged with any sort of...
Which is wild to me a little bit. Like, he got a break there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know the area. I don't know all of that. But clearly, you know, if they had the evidence to do it, they would have done it. Very lucky that he didn't get hurt, that he didn't hurt anyone else. I mean, honestly, because those are the situations that can go really bad. Want to point out that he was found after 4:30 in the morning, and he was still that intoxicated. Kentucky still hasn't released any sort of official statement on the matter. Willis might not be a name that a lot of people are totally familiar with, but he did start to have at least something of a role on last year's team. And the expectation is, although Kentucky will be loaded next season, that I could see him garnering similar minutes. He's not a starter. He's not a star or anything like that, but Kentucky fans know who Derek Willis is. And yeah, man, it is not the kind of headline that you want. This makes now two seasons in a row. Granted, both incidents happened in the off season. I guess one was the preseason, where, you know, blue blood top 10 programs have had issues with players being wasted around vehicles. We had the Indiana situation, which was much more serious, and that involved multiple players, and one of them had to go to the hospital and all of that. And now you have Willis. I'll be interested to see what Calipari does. He's actually, as we record this, he is at the U.S. Open outside of his hometown of Pittsburgh. So he hasn't said anything yet. But
shout out to the hometown of Pittsburgh.
Sam knows all about that. But yeah, I mean, listen, this is, you know, this is another Kentucky headline, one they certainly don't want. And we'll wait to see if we get any more details. But just honestly, like, it's a crazy situation. I'm not a huge drinker to begin with. Like, I rarely drink, but I've never, when I have been drunk, I've never once, even in my drunken state, thought that I should or could drive. I'm thankful that I don't have that wiring, because I have had plenty of friends and plenty of people listening to this podcast either have done it, have friends that have done it, have friends that have gotten DUIs. I've had a buddy who got a DUI after he flipped his Wrangler and really probably should have died and didn't, was very lucky not to have died. And credit to him, after that, like, he's never even once even remotely thought about drinking and driving again. But it's awful that it had to get to that point. But I've just never gotten to that where I thought, yeah, no, I can totally drive right now. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. Honestly, it's one of the most irresponsible, most dangerous things you could ever do to someone. And yet it just seems like, I don't know, I don't want to get all totally societal and political on this, but it just seems like it's one of those things that's always going to be part of our society. It sucks. Like, people just, they go to college, they drink too much, they think they can do this. And he is so lucky that he didn't kill himself or kill anyone else, wasn't behind the vehicle. And it's just the most bizarre scene to see him sleeping, door open outside of his car at 4:37 in the morning when the cops find him.
To your point, and this isn't it's a problem everywhere, but it's especially a problem in the United States, because I think people know who listen to the podcast regularly. Kelly and I have had exchange students before, one from Germany and one from Italy, and our German was first. And one time we had people over. It was, you know, Diana was with us, and we had people over. It was like a little party, like the type of party you have after you're married and have multiple kids. You know, like, you ain't really partying, but like, people are coming over and drinking and doing whatever they do. And folks got ready to leave. Keep in mind, she's like 17 years old. And folks were getting ready to leave. And she was like, whoa, 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 where are you going? To like one of my friends. And he was like, I'm going home. Like, he'd had a couple beers. Like, it technically probably shouldn't have been driving. But like, there was nothing abnormal about him getting in his car and driving. You know, given at least the way I grew up. Like, it wasn't crazy for him to be in his car going home. Like, he wasn't drunk, slurring his words, anything like that. She flipped out. She could not understand. She was like, what do you mean you're driving home? He's like, I'm driving home. What are you talking? Why are you yelling at me? She's like, you had a beer. I saw you. He was like, yeah, I had a beer. It's fine. It's not fine. And so later on, she and I have this conversation. I was like, well, that was kind of wild. I appreciate you being like, I appreciate you caring. But like, where does that come from? She was like, I don't even know anybody who's ever had a DUI. Like, it just we don't do that. Like, you just do not drink and drive. Under any circumstances, you just do not do it. And, you know, then we got into all these different culture conversations. She was like, also, like, premarital sex without sex without a condom, it just does not happen. She's like, she had never seen a pregnant teenager in her life until she got here. And then there were five in her high school here. She had never seen or heard about a pregnant. She just didn't know any. she couldn't believe it. I was like, well, do you guys not do it? She was like, of course we do. Like, what are you talking about? She looked at me like I was old and stupid. And she was like, but we don't have unprotected sex. Like, I don't understand all you Americans. Like, you Americans are crazy. You're just drinking and driving all the time, having unprotected sex all the time. I was like, okay, I get it. We are crazy. Like, I understand where you're coming from, but it was just such a shock. Like, she was blown away by how casually Americans will drink and drive. But, you know, back to the original point, like, the Derek Willis story is crazy. It looks like he just started driving, recognized he couldn't, pulled over as best he could, got out of his car, and went to sleep in the road. Like, I've never even heard of anybody doing that.
And plus, you're a Kentucky player. Like, you know that Cal has just put these players, and he's not a freshman, he's a senior to be, you know, so many seminars and warnings, and know who you are, know when you're a part of this program and on this team, everyone will know you in this town, in this state. So that's what makes it even a little more surprising. Will be interesting to see what kind of punishment comes down, because I would expect that there has to be something. I don't know if it'll be strictly off season, or Cal will straight up and say, you know, no, he's going to be suspended for the first few games of the season. I don't know. We'll see. But I would think Kentucky should do something.
How perfect is it that Calipari hasn't made any statements on Derek Willis sleeping in the road while intoxicated yet, but managed to find time to take a shot at Rick Pitino this week?
Love that.
He can't comment on Derek Willis sleeping in the middle of a road, but he can take a shot at Rick Pitino. If you haven't seen that story yet, you can also find it at CBSSports.com. Well, let's get out of here. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That's the quickest way to get your hands on the latest episode. So go do that, and we'll talk to you again next week. Till then, take care.